thing to sit on, the pavement, really noisy, people walking almost right over you. Now we can see what you're made of, Ajahn Brahm. See if you can really meditate. See if you can do what you tell other people to do. And it was really good fun. Because there I remembered, it's not the sound disturbs you. It's you who disturb the sound. What do we mean by that? How can you sit in the middle for 2 hours, a nice 2 hour sit, and I had a lovely time? Because what I did was the simile of, I call it the simile of the TV screen. I mentioned this in passing, now comes the full picture of the TV screen. If you are going, when you go back overseas, if you go back overseas after this retreat, or you go interstate, whenever you go traveling, which most people do, you will see on the back of the seat in front of you, unless you're traveling really cheapo aircraft, you'll find this little TV monitor. And you can turn it on, just watch a documentary or something. And when you turn it on, first of all, you can see the upholstery to the left and to the right, above and below the TV screen. It's only a tiny thing. But have you noticed, just after a few minutes, that your mind fits neatly inside the screen, and you are totally unaware of the upholstery to the left, the right, above and below. In fact, your mind fits perfectly into that small little box. And it's the same experience if you have one of these 6 foot wide plasma screen TVs, which I see in some people's houses. It doesn't matter how big it is, once it's turned on, your mind fits perfectly inside the screen, no matter how big or how small it is. And I tell this to people, if you are selling these things, I apologize, but I'm going to lose you business. It does not matter how big the screen is. You only ever notice how big the screen is when it's not turned on. When it's turned on, your mind fits into it, and the experience will be precisely the same. So if any of you are thinking of buying a new, huge plasma screen TV, don't need to. Buy a small one and give the rest of the money, the difference, to Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center. But now this is a phenomena of focusing. Because eventually you just fit inside, and everything which is not important, including the shape of the screen, what's to the left, the right, above and below, falls off your awareness. It just disappears. And that is the way we deal with hindrances such as sound. When you are first, say, you may be watching the breathing, for example, you're watching it, you can hear the sound. Somebody banging the door, someone shuffling, somebody coughing. And what do? It's so important for you, it's like right in the center, the most important part of the meditation. You're not really watching the breath, you're listening to the sound, and the breath is to the left or the right somewhere, which is the same simile, as the same process as a TV set. After a while, the breath falls off and all you have is the sound in there. You have been taken over, kidnapped, hijacked by the sound. But if you still keep the center of your field of attention on your meditation object, say it is the breath. So the breath is right in the center, to the left, to the right, above and below. You can have the sound, feelings in the body, all sorts of stuff. But don't put it in the center of the screen in this metaphor. And then you'll find, as long as the breath is in the center, doesn't matter how much noise is there, sooner or later it just falls off the screen and you're not aware of it anymore. That is such a common phenomenon. You may be reading a book and you're really getting into it because it's an excellent book, like, you know, Don't Worry, Be Grumpy, or Good, Bad, Who Knows, or all these other excellent books which are available in bookshops close to you. But you're reading the book and sometimes you get so into the book everything outside the book falls off your screen. And literally you can't hear anything outside. Literally that somebody comes up and asks you, you know, can you please move, madam? And you just don't hear them. You may not have experienced that for yourself, but I'm certainly you've experienced that maybe when your husband has been watching the soccer on TV. darling telephone call. He's not ignoring you. It's just you are off the screen. You know, you've fallen off a long time ago because a TV set and a soccer match is the most important. And you literally can't hear anything else. Now, people can do that when they're watching a movie or watching a cricket or soccer, depending on what you like. Why is it that they can't do that when they're meditating? If they can just focus, you know, just keep the center. You don't need to use force, but just center on the breathing, say, if that's your meditation object. And after a very short while, everything else falls off the screen. You just don't be aware of the sound outside of you. You don't even aware of your body anymore. That's off the screen now. It's off the radar. So that's what I did in Hay Street Mall. And just after a while, you couldn't hear any sound. Even though it was blaring at you. Because you were just focusing on your breath. You couldn't feel the hard pavement, the stone pavement underneath your bottom. And it was all you could feel is the breath. That's exactly what happened. But if I thought of the pavement, then straight away that would come to the center of the screen, that would take over, and that was very painful and very cold. So this is actually how we deal with these disturbances. It's not the sound which disturbs you. It's you. Go to get the sound and bring it into the center of your screen of vision. You may also experience that when you're doing the walking meditation, which is a wonderful way of focusing because you put all your attention just on your legs moving. When you're doing walking meditation, don't look to the left, look to the right, because then you're taking all this sensory image and putting that into the center of your field of attention. You usually put your eyes about 2 feet in front of you. You know, just so you are very sure you're not going to bump into something. I know some people say they want to do walking meditation with their eyes closed, but if you do it, you'll be bumping into the wall. And so our insurance does not cover that, so you're going to have to pay for it yourself. Or if you really insist on walking meditation with your eyes closed, please go and get a crash helmet. So when you bang into the wall, it's not going to damage you. So you put 2 feet, that's all, in front of you, not to the left, not to the right, not looking at anybody else, just 2 foot in front of you. And you walk to the end, you can see the wall coming up to you, so you can stop and turn around and go back again. So what you're doing, just focusing in a little small area. And after a while, everything else falls off the screen. You're literally not aware of anybody else in that walking meditation room, even if they're walking just a few feet behind you or beside you. You can't notice them because you're focused in this lovely little bubble of mindfulness of just what's happening right now. And that becomes very, very, very peaceful because everything else falls off. And the experience I had my very first few weeks as a monk in Thailand, I used to do, this was in Bangkok, noisy Bangkok. And in fact, they put me in a room in Wat Saket, and just on the edge of the monastery, and there was a house opposite. Every afternoon when I was doing meditation, the guy was practicing on his drum kit. No joke. I came to meditate and all it was drum, bang, bang, bang. I wouldn't mind if he could play it, but he was just learning. But anyway, that was my suffering. But when I did my walking meditation, you just focus so much on just the feet, just 2 foot in front of you, just walking, and soon so much else just fell off, you know, your radar screen. You just couldn't hear the sound of the traffic. You didn't know what was going on outside. All you could feel is these incredible movements in your feet. And what happened next was showed me just how still I had become, because I was just happily just doing my walking meditation. And I heard a sound in the distance. Brahma Wang So, like that. And I didn't know what it was, but actually what it really was, there was a monk right in my ear shouting his lungs off, trying to get my attention. Because I was late for an appointment. I'd forgotten all about it, and I was so happy in my meditation, I didn't know what was going on. Brahma Wang So. It was right in my ear hole. And it was still like 1,000 miles away because you're just focusing on this beautiful place. And it was just so hard to get out. You know, I knew that this was a senior monk and I was very junior and I had to be respectful and just, you know, respond to him. But, you know, when I started moving my head to meet his eyes, there were so many incredible movements when you just turn your head around. I just was watching all these incredible movements in the muscles as just one head turns. It took me forever to turn my head. And he must have been very, very, very patient with me, because it took about 5 minutes. You know, when you're talking to someone, and literally about 5 minutes to turn your head around. And then when I find it, I'm really speeding up. When I actually did, I said, "Pardon?" And he had to say it again. It took me so long to get out of this beautiful, calm, peaceful state. And this is what you can do when you focus. The focusing part is, that's the very best simile of the TV set, because you've experienced that. Whatever you look at, I'm looking at Ananda's nose now, your glasses have vanished. Now they come back again. You can focus right in there. What is in the center of your screen stays. Everything else just vanishes. So this is how we can meditate in noisy places, in cold places, hot places, painful bodies. Just choose your object of meditation. Just make sure that's in the center. Don't need to do anything, just keep it in the center there. Make peace, be kind, be gentle with it, and soon everything else just vanishes. And so many of these distractions just aren't there anymore. And once you get into this, it's just a beautiful thing to do. If you have some work to do, and when I was laying bricks, you know, people would be trying to talk to me, I'd just watch the brick, and you know, what they were saying was a long way away. So I could actually lay the bricks nice and perfectly because I was focused. When you're writing something, your focus is on writing, nothing can disturb you because it's off your radar. A lot of time you can't even hear it. So that's one of the ways of dealing with the distractions in meditation, by not keeping things in the center. But of course, when you do have problems in meditation, you're not actually staying where you are, because you want to be somewhere else. When you want to be somewhere else, where you want to be, you keep bringing all these things into the center of your screen of attention. No wonder you can never find stillness. It doesn't matter what you have, just stay with what you have, keep it there, and then you find this incredible stillness comes. And I think you understand that the first hindrance of wanting, desire, even for good things, it's a hindrance to meditation. It stops you being still. Every time you want something, you're agitating your mind. That's why even in the chanting, you know, may I be contented and easily satisfied, not proud and demanding in nature. Are you demanding something of yourself in this retreat? Are you contented? Or do you think, when I get jhana, then I'll be contented? No, you've got to be contented now with what you have. Be easily satisfied. Who do you think you are to get jhanas? You proud and conceited. Now, if you think, oh, no way can I get jhanas. I'm just an ordinary lay peer person. I'm a girl and girl can't get jhanas. Sexist. I'm just stirring up, see if there's any pride in there, see any conceit in there. But when you just give up and don't try to get anything, that's when all these incredible states happen. When you give up, when you let go. There's a type of meditation exercise, which is usually the most popular in my retreats. It's a type of meditation which people put into practice the most often when they come on a retreat with Ajahn Brahm. It's called the Ananda Method of Enlightenment. Not this Ananda, I mean the Venerable Ananda. Because if you don't know his story, he was with the Buddha 25 years. He was his attendant. He had listened to everything. He had private consultations with the best teacher. And you'd think that, you know, 25 years staying with someone like the Buddha, he'd get enlightened. No. When the Buddha was about to die, you can imagine how depressed he was. 25 years with a great teacher. And he'd be sitting there, and all these other monks and nuns and lay people coming up and saying they got jhanas enlightened, and he was listening to all of this. That really sucked. You know, day after day, everyone else was getting enlightened except him. And when the Buddha died, you can imagine how he felt. If I can't get enlightened while the Buddha was alive, what hope is there for me now? And so it was really, really tough for him. But a few months later, they decided to have this big meeting of the 500 enlightened beings. You know, to actually to get all the teachings together, because now, nothing was really organized. Now, I say this, you know, and there's a lot of truth to this. It's a joke, but it's a lot of truth to it. If you don't like organized religion, become a Buddhist. We are disorganized religion. But they did try their best to organize things. So get all the monks together and just, what did you hear? What did you hear? And bring all of this teachings together. And so 499 arahats, and they decided they'd have to let Ananda in because he knew so much. He'd been with the Buddha for 25 years. And even though he wasn't an arahat, wasn't enlightened, they had to let him come in. And so there was poor Ananda the next morning, having to go to a meeting where everyone was enlightened except for him. You can imagine how that feels. I often give the example. Imagine at the end of this retreat, I say that everybody on this retreat, even those blow-ins from Bodhinyana Monastery who come over every day, everybody is enlightened except for you. How would you feel? That would really, really upset you. Everyone's enlightened. Now, even your wife is enlightened, Ananda, and you're not, and being a man, that's unfair. Or your daughter, but not you, and So, he thought, just to keep up with the Joneses, I'd better try and get enlightened tonight. And so he meditated, and meditated, and meditated all night, gave it everything he got. No sleep, no messing around, enlightenment or bust. Have you ever done enlightenment or bust? If you have, you always bust, every time, 100%. So it got to dawn and he was busted. No enlightenment, not even close. Not even a glimmer. And really depressed and upset. So he thought, an hour or two to go to the meeting, I will take a nap. So he went to his room and he decided just to have a quick nap because he'd been meditating all night. And before his head hit the pillow, he became the 500th arahat. With psychic powers as well. You know, sometimes when you open up the cornflakes, you get the free gifts. Enlightenment is why you meditate, but sometimes you get a few gifts. You know, well done. So he got a few psychic powers as well. And interestingly, just to complete the story, that when he went to the meeting, he deliberately went late. On purpose. They locked the gates of the big hall because he wanted to make everybody know that he really had cracked it, he was enlightened. So according to the story, he came in through the keyhole, which is called making an entrance. How he did that, I don't know, but that was pretty cool. So they realized, okay, he is enlightened. And how did that happen? We call that the Ananda method of meditation, of enlightenment. You go back to your room, take a nap, see if it works. Who knows, one of these days before your head hits the pillow, it might happen to you. That's the Ananda method of meditation. But why did that happen? It was because he wanted enlightenment. He was trying. And he got his, as they say, his back against the wall, no place to go. So he gave up. He let go. And that was why he became enlightened. When you want something, you're putting this big barrier up between you and enlightenment. Have you ever noticed at times that when you don't want anything, when you just like a few minutes ago, just sitting on the stupa, just in the sunshine, a bit windy, but it was okay, and just so happy to be there? It's called contentment in the Metta Sutta, being contented and easily satisfied. This is what we're supposed to be doing. To see how much contentment we can find. So instead of being out there, because I had about 20 minutes, I was not killing time, because that's against my first precept. I'm not supposed to kill any sentient being. And I reckon time is a sentient being. So we don't kill time, we just enjoy these incredible moments where you have nothing to do. I don't need to answer a question. I don't need to brush my teeth. I don't need to give a talk. I've got nothing to do. Yeah. And you grab those moments and just be content. Just happy to be here. Not wanting anything in the whole world. Now those are called moments of peace, of contentment. And they are delicious. And there, you know, just the story which I was saying yesterday about walking up the path to the Bodhinyana Monastery, the road, and seeing things so differently. Have you ever seen the incredible, beautiful grass around those stupas? Amazing stuff. When you're content and you're still, your happiness increases, your mindfulness deepens. And you can see amazing things out there. They're there all the time. But when we want something, we can't see them. One of my favorite sayings, which is a summary of the Four Noble Truths of the Buddha, but put in modern language in a one-liner. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. So sitting out there, before I came in here, I didn't want anything. And I can enjoy this incredible grass which was there. And it reminded me of one of my favorite poems by this 17th century British mystic and painter as well, William Blake. And this little stanza was to see a world in a grain of sand, a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. It's got a rhyme, so that's why flower, an hour. But when I first came across, I thought, wow, that guy knows what he's talking about. To see a world in a grain of sand, that's super mindfulness. Something so simple as a blade of grass. There's an incredible amount of stuff going on in there. And if you see actually a flower, that is so much more beautiful than a green blade of grass. And a flower just blows your mind apart. It's incredible beauty, texture, this myriad of colors going on in just one petal of a small wild flower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand. Now we're getting somewhere. Infinity, unbounded, no limits. Everything is just totally open. And eternity, timelessness. Right now. Now you are flying in deep cosmic meditation. When you get to this sort of ideas, you can see there's no wanting anymore. There's no desire. It's just right here in front of you. That is where meditation happens. All these people who have all these goals and are striving. I'm going to do it now, like Ananda tried. Okay, no more messing around today. I've had a good meal. I'm going to sit for very long now. Now I'm going to watch the breath this time. Or I'm going to be content this time. Shut up with that sort of stuff. Stop making plans. Stop telling your poor old mind what to do. Stop being a control freak. And instead, stop. One of my greatest similes. Now, so you get similes from the Buddha, but sometimes you make up your own ones. And this is one of the best ones, which I've managed to come across, is the donkey and the carrot simile. If you haven't heard this one before, most of you had, but as I said to the monks last night, I think I said to you, the only reason I keep telling these stories again is because you didn't understand it last time. If you did understand it, you would be enlightened. So the donkey and the carrot. How do they make a donkey move? They get a stick and stupid people beat the donkey. And does a donkey move, go anywhere? Not at all. just like your stupid donkey mind. You try and force it to meditate, try and get it to get up in the morning, scold it, argue with it, get upset at it. Does that really help the donkey mind? Not at all. People keep on calling the monkey mind, but I prefer the donkey mind. You all got donkey minds. You're all trying to cajole and push, struggle and strive, trying to get it to become enlightened, or at least trying to get it peaceful. And it never works. So, you try the next stage. You tie the stick to the donkey's neck. So the front of the stick is 2 feet in front of the donkey's head. At the end of the stick, you tie a string. At the end of the string, you tie a carrot. And the donkey sees the carrot. And when the donkey sees the carrot, donkey likes carrot. So donkey moves towards the carrot. When the donkey moves, the stick moves, the string moves, and so does the carrot move. So it doesn't matter how much the donkey walks and strives, the carrot is still 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. So on these retreats, I'm never strict with any of you. I don't tell you to get up in the morning. I never scold anybody. I don't use a stick. It's carrot. Jhanas. The bliss better than sexual orgasm. Enlightenment. Free at last. I give you all this marketing. Especially, I remember whenever I go to the prisons and I say, jhanas are bliss better than sex. Everybody is paying full attention. They really want that stuff. So, that's my carrot. And you've had that carrot for a long time. I've been talking about jhanas and how wonderful they are. And some of you have come on this retreat chasing that carrot. I want jhanas. Okay? That's what you come here for. So you've got the carrot and you chase it. And you will find you won't get even close to it. Why? Because when you move, when you chase the carrot, the stick moves, the string moves, and so does the carrot move. And it's always roughly about a couple of feet in front of you. You can see it. You can smell it. And it's almost there, and you go towards it, and it goes away again. But there is a way of catching that carrot. And this is why I teach these retreats. You've already been running fast enough after the carrot. You don't need to accelerate anymore. But all you need to do is to learn how to stop. You stop chasing the carrot. And what happens when you stop chasing the carrot? Because you've been running after it for such a long time, many years, the carrot swings away from you. The meditation gets worse. You get more restless. You fall asleep. Your meditation is nowhere near as good as it was when you put forth effort. Because the carrot's going further away from you now. But it soon swings to the end of its arc, about 4 foot in front of your mouth. Never been that far away. You think everything is falling apart. Ajahn Brahm's method doesn't work. But then, something strange happens. Something weird. Something you've never experienced before. The carrot starts to come towards you. And you know what happens next. Soon it's 2 foot in front of your mouth, like it normally is. But now it's coming at really great speed towards you. You're just sitting here, you're doing absolutely nothing. And breath is just there. It's a delightful breath, it just comes to you. Limiters, incredible, powerful, beautiful lights coming. You're not doing anything, it just comes towards you. It becomes stronger and stronger, incredible jhanas, wow. And it all comes towards you. You're not doing nothing because the carrot keeps swinging towards you. Towards you and towards you. And the last piece of advice, compassion. Sometimes we underrate compassion in the path of meditation. The last little trick to get enlightened is remember compassion. As the carrot comes right close to you, carrot, the door of my mouth is open to you. Come in. If you don't open your mouth, it bounces off your teeth. You missed your chance. So, similarly, this is what happens. You stop. You let go. You don't want anything. Wanting is a hindrance. And you're still. And when that happens, first of all, things go away from you. It looks like your mind's getting worse. You're getting more sleepy. be patient. Soon comes that time when it starts coming towards you. And that's the fun time. How easy is meditation? You sit there and do absolutely nothing. And all this incredible stuff just comes to you, one after the other. But when you want it, you've blown it again. So that's why you have to learn how to practice Third Noble Truth meditation. Letting go of wanting is a cause of enlightenment. First thing the Buddha taught. And if any of you, any time during this retreat, are having a hard time, if you're bored with your meditation, if you're frustrated with it, if it's not working, if you want to go home, don't come and see me. Because this is what I'll tell you. I'll tell you before you come and see me, so you don't have to come and bother me. You have just been doing Second Noble Truth meditation. Wanting is the cause of suffering. So if you're suffering, you've been wanting something. Find out what it is you wanted, what you were striving for, what you're trying to get. Once you see that, you realize why your meditation never worked. Because you wanted something, you were causing suffering for your body and mind. And meditation won't work. You get frustrated. But instead, you know, it may be the first meditation you've ever done, maybe a hopeless meditator, maybe sick, maybe tired, maybe old, maybe next to death. Doesn't matter. Just sit there. I don't want anything else in the whole world. No wanting. I'm going to stop all this wanting and struggling and going on to things. Often that's one of the little stories in my book. I keep on saying, how rare it is to see a human being, and how many human goings are there in this world? Always going somewhere. The whole life is a journey with no stop. Meditation is a stop. Stop going places. Stop trying to attain things. And instead, realize, like they say, when you get your picture in the front of Time magazine, you've arrived, baby. You've arrived. Have you arrived yet? Of course you've arrived. You're here. So imagine yourself, you've arrived. So once you've arrived, enjoy it. Stay here. When I was traveling recently, I was traveling from Canada to Germany and transiting Heathrow. And, no, but monks don't have any money. So I usually rely on the lounges, you know, because I got all these frequent flyer points, to actually have some lunch and have a shower. But I found that they weren't going to let me in the lounge. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go hungry today. And I feel really dirty, you know, traveling overnight from Canada and going to Germany in the afternoon, about 5 or 6 hours, you know. And then I found in Heathrow Airport, they don't just have a transit lounge, they have an arrivals lounge in Heathrow. So you go out, you know, once you've been through the immigration and customs, you go out. And then for people who are traveling, you know, on these nice classes like I sometimes travel, you can actually go in the lounge and have a shower and have something to eat before you actually, you know, go to your hotel or go to your destination in London. It's called an arrivals lounge. And I love arrivals lounges because this is an arrival lounge. This is Jhana Grove Arrival Lounge. You've arrived. So enjoy it. Take a shower. Have some food where you are right now. You've arrived. Stick around. Don't sort of go anywhere yet. Be here. It's taken such a long time, many years for you to get to this point. Now, stay here. Don't want anything else. Don't try to go somewhere else. Don't try and get a taxi to your next destination. Don't go on the London Underground to your next destination. Stop. You've arrived and enjoy. Now when you do things like that, you are busting through that first hindrance. You are leaving it for dead. You don't want anything. And amazing things happen. You're just so content. What do you want anyway? What are you here for? know, for the time you were born, desire has been put inside of you and has infected you like some Ebola disease which kills you. And here I am disinfecting you of the Ebola of craving and desire. So you don't have this terrible, terrible itch of always wanting to do something. That was one of Ajahn Chah's favourite stories, the dog with the itch, the dog with mange. He always used to talk about that. This dog with mange, it would just go into the sun because it had this terrible itch on it, and you know, it still found no relief. So it went into the shade, and it still had the itch. It went into the water, it went under the rock, it went into the plains, it went into the jungles. Wherever it went, it still had the itch. Because, you know, that itch was on its skin. And that itch is called the itch of wanting, the itch of desire. Wherever you go, it's still there. You know, you may go to your amazing resort, maybe in, the Maldives Islands, or in the Seychelles, or in the Caribbean. Are you content there? Or have you still got the itch to keep on going? If you get the best sex, the best food, the best meditation teacher, but you still got the itch, you want more. That itch of craving means you never find any peace at all. But that's the itch. If you remove that itch, then the dog, whether it's in the sun or in the shade, whether it's in the water in the house, is content. It wasn't the situation it was in. It was this underlying itch of wanting, of craving. Kept that dog just moving backwards and forwards with never any peace or happiness or freedom at all. I often tell people the two types of freedoms in the world. And the first one is the one which people think is the only freedom. The freedom of desires. To get what you want, when you want, however you want it. That's why they call United States the land of the free. What a joke. Ha ha ha. It's not the land of the free. You go there and people are just so uptight. They're in the power of desires and craving. It's a freedom of desire, which is no freedom at all. And the other type of freedom, which is what Buddhism is into, is the freedom from desire. Desire, this itch, has gone. So you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to buy things. You don't have to do anything. It's incredible how you are controlled by desires and cravings. Most of them are imposed upon you by adverts, by culture, by what you think you should be doing. Someone told you you should be doing this. Still remember the time I had my first glass of British beer. I think 13 and a half, breaking the law again. You know, it's boys being boys, you know, pushing the boundaries. So going into a pub, pretending you were 16, and getting my first half a pint of British beer, thinking how tough and how brave I was. And then I drank it. And I mention this because last night we were talking about drinking urine. Quite frankly, it tasted the same. And I've drunk both. It's absolutely true. When I first took this and started drinking it, and I screwed up my face and thought, why are people paying good money for this? Why is this such a popular thing to do, to drink beer? It does taste terrible. The first time, you know, you took, you know, British beer, it tasted awful. But, you know, you had to like it because the peer pressure was so strong. So, you know, lying to my friends, oh, this is delicious, this is great, and I just want to pour it down the toilet or anywhere, quick. But I forced myself to drink it. And just after only just about 3 months, I started to like it. Later on in my life, you know, you spend good money drinking lots of it. What did you do that for? Where did that light come from? It was totally imposed upon you. My cravings were imposed by peer pressure. It only took a long time afterwards to untie that peer pressure and let go of those cravings. And then you felt so free. It's one of the nice joys of being a monk. We're so free of desires because we've got no money. We just can't get those desires, even if we wanted them. No, they're out of reach. because they're out of reach, the craving, the desire vanishes for them. They feel so free. You know, one of the things, I don't mind saying now because I'm an old monk now, old enough anyway. Sometimes you meet these girls who are fashion models, and other people think, wow, they're so hot. And to me, they're just a girl. You know, that sort of part of you disappears, and so you can actually relate to very, 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 very beautiful women as people rather than sex objects. But I get in trouble sometimes for that, because I do remember the time I was teaching a meditation class in Double Bay in Sydney. Now, Double Bay, that's an elite area. So you get some very, very wealthy people learning meditation in that part of Sydney. And then as I was teaching meditation, there's only about 30 or 40 people in the room or something. And then there's this girl in the back there. She was smiling at me and just smiling. And I just wondered what the heck she was up to. You know, I'm a monk, she's trying to make a pass at me. What's she doing? So I was really confused what was going on. And afterwards, I asked the organizer, and it was old John Barter. I said, this lady was doing all these things. Oh, don't you recognize her? I said, no, who is she? I think she's some famous TV star. I don't know, it was Lisa McClune or something like that. Some famous TV star, which everybody in Australia knows, except for monks when we don't watch the TV. And she apparently afterwards was really, really upset at me because I didn't recognize her. Because I was relating to her just like an ordinary person rather than a film star. And that was just really, the word is discombobulated her. One of my favorite words, discombobulate, which which means, which makes her just all over the place. She didn't know how to handle it. Discombobulate. There are some words in the English language which you should really learn because as they sound, that's what they mean. So if you get discombobulated, it means, you know, you just don't know where to stand, what to do. So the poor lady was just really upset at me for that because I was dealing with her just as an ordinary person. So when you're free of many desires, it's amazing. You can relate to the world in a totally different way. And it's a much better way, a more sort of sane way. And this is called the freedom from desires. So the freedom of desires. And that's what we experience in meditation. Sitting there, you just don't want anything in the whole world. You don't want jhanas, you don't want enlightenment, you don't want anything. You're just sitting here, totally free of every desire in the whole world. You know what's going to happen next if you get that sort of mind? When there's no desires, you're putting the cup down, it gets still really quickly, all by itself. And mindfulness gets huge boosts of energy. You get so incredibly blissed out. And because you're not sort of moving anywhere, there's nothing to move you, that hindrance has been vanished. You get into incredibly deep, powerful states of mind. Nimittas are just so incredibly strong. Jhanas happen. And you find out the first, the second and third noble truths. Craving is the problem. Wanting, that's a big hindrance. Letting go of wanting, nibbana, you're blissing out. Carrots coming right into your mouth. Thank you. So easy to do when you know how to stop wanting things. So that's the first hindrance. That's a big one. It's one of the reasons why that, you know, I keep on saying this, just, you know, put things down, let it go, stop trying, stop striving and stuff like that. And it's really a very hard sell for me to say that. Some of you come on other meditation traditions and, yeah, you've got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning. If you don't get up at that time, you're dragged in here and publicly humiliated. You've got to sit through pain. Come on, put some effort into it. Stay up later. The person who goes to bed at 10 o'clock, they're the namby-pamby cream puffs. The real meditators, we stay up till 12. We only sleep 3 hours a night. And even if we sleep, we only sleep on the floor. We don't sleep on these mattresses. And we don't use a hot water in the showers. It's cold water once every 3 days without soap. And we brush our teeth with the wire brush, not the soft. Some people are into that, you know. Have you ever seen people like that? but they're such control freaks. And they go on these retreats, and they tell me afterwards, when they come home again, they're worse than when they started. They're really a pain in the ass for the poor people who have to put up with them after they've been on retreat. There's something really, 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 really wrong there. Because they've been encouraging their wanting. Their desires have been enhanced and empowered rather than weakened. Which is why they're even more demanding. And here, all our demands with our desires vanish away. We're just so content just being in this little room. It may not be that clean, but it's clean enough. The bed could be longer if you're a big person, but it's big enough. Sometimes there's no hot water because all the hot water's been used. Oh, it's okay, I can shower tomorrow, it's warm enough. And you may not get the food you like, but it's good enough for the day. You get this beautiful contentment which makes you easygoing, and happiness is so easy to find. It's amazing when you get a fault-finding mind, you know, the old two bad bricks in a wall. You can find two bad bricks in any wall. You can find rubbish food, you know, which has been on offer to you today. You can find rubbish teachings by Ajahn Brahm. You can find rubbish anywhere. But that's not the point. The point is we find contentment. Everybody here is just doing their utmost, just they're so compassionate and kind and generous. And that just warms the heart. That gives you so much compassion and gratitude and happiness and contentment. And being in a beautiful little place, Jhana Grove, people are working so hard. You know, they make some noise, but that's as far as they've got. They're trying. They're coming on a retreat. What wonderful people I'm living with during these few days. It gives you so much happiness and contentment. And then you just become this beautiful, happy meditator. And you sit down. You cross your legs if you want to, put them in front of you. You have this beautiful happiness. Your mind becomes so still. And the happiness just goes through the roof. And as I say, this is a sign that the meditation is taking off. A really good bliss out of your head. The highest happiness. That's why I became a monk. That's why I stay as a monk. That's why I don't mind teaching and doing all this stuff, because you have access to that whenever you want. So you're a very rich monk. So, bliss out whenever you want. Isn't that a wonderful thing to do? Now you know my secret. Just let go. Stop wanting. That's the first. The other hindrance is, now the ill will hindrance. Now that's a fault finder. It's the complete opposite. It's a type of wanting, but the worst type of wanting. It's always seeing what's wrong with other people. You start seeing what's wrong with you as well. Can you be content with yourself? And all your faults. If you can't be content with yourself because you think you've been a bad person, then, I said this before, I'll say it again, go and find a perfect tree in the forest. There is no such thing as a perfect tree in this forest. Every tree is bent, crooked, damaged, leaves falling off, eaten by bugs. That's why the trees are gorgeous in the forest. And if you ever find the crooked trees, they're the ones which are the most beautiful. The ones with all these scars on the bark, and just all knobbled all over the place. Those are the beautiful trees in the forest. They belong. And that's like you. You are beautiful enough. You're all crooked and bent and damaged. You're all hopeless cases. That is why you can become enlightened. Stop trying to improve yourself. Stop hating your faults. And instead, embrace them. Bring them in. The door of my heart's open to me, exactly as I am. So no ill will. No wanting. You're at peace with yourself. With all your stupid idiosyncrasies and the silly things you do, all the bad jokes which I say. Here's the latest bad joke. We've got time for a really bad joke? Here we go. I saw this the other day. Really good bad joke. Courtesy of Rodney. There was a gang of bikies, you know, of Hell's Angels, you know, these guys on the motorbikes, really tough guys, riding down one of the highways in the United States, and they came across a bridge. And there's a huge crowd of people on the bridge, with the state troopers there as well. And as the bikies rode past, they thought, let's stop and see what's going on. And they saw this was a woman on the bridge, about to jump off, commit suicide. And the leader of the bikies thought, this is a good opportunity to give the bikie community a good name, to do a public service and maybe be a legend for the day. So the leader of this bike is this huge guy, full of tattoos, beards, the whole works, pushed his way through to the front, and he saw this woman about to jump off, and he talked to her. He said, listen, lady, you're too beautiful to jump off. Give me a kiss. That was his trick. And so, you know, she was taken aback, so she thought, why not? And so she leant to the bikie leant to her, and they kissed really deeply for about 5 minutes. And the crowd were clapping. Just what immense emotional intelligence from, of all people, a leader of a bikie gang. And when they finished kissing, the bikie said, wow, that was amazing. You got such talent. Why kill yourself? Come and ride with me instead. Why you want to kill yourself for? And the girl said, because my parents don't like me dressing up in girls' clothes. I think so. The bike pushed her off. But anyway, that's my idiosyncrasy. So that's the way I'm bent and crooked in that way. But you love yourself as you are, but you're at peace with yourself. So when you get rid of the hindrances of ill will and all fault finding against yourself, you're at peace with yourself. You're not trying to change yourself. You've got no business to do with yourself. You can accept yourself. Once you're at peace, two hindrances have been overcome. Hindrance of wanting, the hindrance of fault finding, ill will. Imagine what that's like. And I mentioned, imagine what that's like. Sometimes, in the meditation today, if you can't overcome the hindrances, just imagine they're overcome. Sit down, use your imagination, your ability to act and play. I'm just going to imagine I'm a Buddha sitting here. No wanting. I'm totally enlightened already. No ill will. I've got immense compassion. I'm just going to imagine this, what it might be like. And then you're almost there. Carry on. You're meditating without any wanting. You know, because you're imagining you've already attained what you wanted to attain, whatever that was. So you can let go and be peaceful. Have a taste of what that's like. A taste of freedom. The taste of having nothing missing, nothing wanting. Now the next two hindrances, I've got 3 minutes to do the last three hindrances. They're easy ones, the first two are the big ones. Oh, the sloth and torpor, it's just tiredness, that's all. It's just because you've been working too hard. And restlessness, again, is caused by wanting or ill will. It moves you, and you have to sort of... As I mentioned in the first talk, why do we think so much? Why can't we just sit still? It's because we want to be somewhere else. Why do you want to be somewhere else? This is good enough. So you've worked so hard to get here. As I say, you've arrived. Just be here and don't want to be anywhere else in the whole world. And then if you're happy to be here, you don't move. That's called restlessness gone. You're here. All restlessness is thinking the next place will be something better. It's not. You've, all your life you've been trying to get the better partner, the better job, the better holiday. Some of you, the better meditation retreat, the better teacher, going from one to another, trying to get the better one. And it keeps going round and round and round. So don't try and get anything better. This is good enough. And that means you're not restless, you're satisfied where you are, easily satisfied, contented and easily satisfied, which means you're not restless. And that restlessness just calms down and you're at peace. In fact, don't even look at just jhanas or enlightenment, just think peace. Where can you find peace in this retreat? When can you find peace? You'll never be this afternoon. It's only now. And it can't be outside. It's not in your room. You won't find peace in front of your plate at the dinner table, for those of you who are hungry. The only time you can find peace is right now, right here. So think peace. It's right in front of you. Take it. And when you're at peace, where's restlessness gone? Totally vanished. And sloth and torpor, that just goes by itself. You make peace with sloth and torpor and it soon vanishes. I would fight my tiredness, so many years fighting it, and I would just wear myself out. My tiredness would go on for much, much longer. Now whenever I have sloth and torpor or tiredness, I let it be. I'm not ashamed of it, it happens. If you want to snore during this retreat, just, if you're really tired, just lay down, put a nice little cushion underneath you, put a blanket over you, you can sleep here. And you can snore here. And anyone else, if you're complaining because someone else has followed my instructions and they're sleeping in the meditation hall and snoring, it's not the sound that disturbs you. It's you who disturbs the sound. Remember that. Like one of the monks, I still don't know exactly who it was. I thought it was Bodhidharma, but apparently it was somebody else. He denies this. But his brother came to visit. Or one of the monk's brothers came to visit. And we're so full at Bodhidharma Monastery, we had no guest room for him. And there was a retreat on over here, so he couldn't come and stay over here. So he said, can you share the room with me? I said, yeah, you can share the room, but be careful. I bet that one of you are going to snore. Probably both of you snore, because you're both old men now. You know, we never think we snore, because we're asleep when it happens. But you ask your partner, and I will say, yes, so you do. It's just nature, there's nothing wrong with it. But anyhow, sure enough, his brother fell asleep first and started snoring. And this poor monk, you know, in a small room, couldn't go to sleep. His brother saw snoring like an elephant. And then he remembered the teachings. It's not the sound disturbs you, it's you who disturbs the sound. He remembered that, so he started undisturbing the sound. And what he did was, he started to use the power of perception, imagination, to imagine this snoring as if it was some modern symphony. You know, like a Beethoven's 1812 with all the guns going off, but you know, in a sort of a bit more dissonant way. And he said it only took him about 5 or 10 minutes. And then, you know, the last thing he remembered was his brother's snoring sounding so melodious and so soft and gorgeous. It was actually quite attractive. And then he fell asleep, and that's the last thing he remembered when he woke up. It's brilliant. It actually works. And if you don't disturb the sound, but you give it another twist of something attractive and peaceful, it's amazing. It becomes very easy to let go of once it's softened and given compassion. So you can do that. But the bone point here is sloth and torpor, it comes because you're tired. Maybe you don't sleep enough. Go and take a rest. And if it is here, you feel a bit dull, just let your body droop. Don't fight it. Just be kind to it. And after a very short while, it vanishes by itself. It's wonderful to see that. When it does vanish in this way, rather than you fighting it, you're always really peaceful afterwards. If you fight it, when the sloth and torpor vanishes, you are restless. And you suppress the restlessness and you fall asleep again. And then you get rid of the sloth and torpor and then you're restless again. That was my sort of going both sides of the pendulum swing, never finding the middle, until I learned how to let go and just let the sloth and torpor be. And when it vanished, you're right in the middle, not restless, not dull, beautiful, aware and peaceful. So don't make that sort of mistake. Don't use your ego and think, I'm going to beat down my sloth and torpor. I'm bigger than this. Just let the sloth and torpor just work its way out with kindness and with softness, and then it vanishes. And that way your hindrances can totally vanish. And you can be just like that person who's been chasing the carrot for so many years, and you stop. No wanting. See the carrot go further and further and further and further and further away. And you stop here, and then the carrot comes towards you. Thank you, Lord Buddha.